yours.
There, okay. There, I was gonna say too.
But we don't have a speed.
In background, I'm the resolution itself. As a principal author, we kicked around a number of ideas down in Juneau. The State Affairs Committee introduced a bill, was working on some energy-related legislation. So we just made a decision, and a number of people on the State Affairs Committee were interested in it. We introduced it through that vehicle. And subsequently, it passed the House and went into the Senate, was amended in the Senate, and the House concurred. So that's essentially how we got to be a group. The House had a slightly different approach, but because it was the waiting days in the Senate to find it's an important enough idea not to meddle with free conference. So that's how. Are you on resources?
No. That's where I was wishing Kay was here.
Well, I tried and tried and tried. I know she's interested, but I called her like 15 times, sent her a telegram, and just couldn't touch base with her.
She just goes to ground.
I think she's outside.
Pardon?
I think she's outside. I think she told me she's going outside. Well, that was in June. Well, I don't know.
As mentioned earlier, there are also four public members representing various segments of the energy interest field. I spoke with the governor twice and Bill Gordon three times, and they said they were going to have a point of Monday last, a week ago today. They haven't been. We subsequently set up a meeting for today, assuming that the full committee would be appointed. But it's just one of those things. There's so much work to do and to be done that you can't wait. You can't wait around forever. The resolution passed almost 2 months ago, so we just decided to go ahead. And after sort of polling the folks as to when everybody could get to town, it seemed like a reasonable time. We have with us, say, Dick Haggard, who has written a paper. And he has a fairly comprehensive overview, and I'll send the paper to everybody just what's going on from the legislative affairs idea insofar as energy, and especially as it deals with the national energy policy and what the state objectives and goals might be. Perhaps we could hear from him and at least let him get out of this hot room if he wants to.
One thing I wonder, just of the people who have been appointed, why don't we just have it read into the record?
I see. Okay, fine. That's probably a good
just
idea.
Just so that of the 8 people who are on, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever, the lack of filling the total complement of 12.
Okay, right. I'm going to go around and say their name for the record.
Okay.
I'm not appointed to this committee.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, really.
You're the designated commissioner of
natural
resources.
Jack Roderick.
Yeah.
Natural resources.
Clarissa Quinlan, the third designee down, Commerce and Economic Development.
Leo Rode and Bill Miles. Anything else before Dick takes off, Doug?
Well, Mr. Miles, I'd like to make a motion. If a motion would be in order that you serve as chairman of the committee. You're very
well, accept that
offer.
unanimous
consent.
Okay.
Bill, like this chairman.
Okay. Well,
that kind of gets it off on some kind of official.
Yeah,
okay.
For the record, my name is Dick Haggard from Legislative Affairs Agency. I'm the petroleum specialist with the research division down in Juneau. The paper that you will be receiving is requested by Bill Miles, and they ask that we look at three things in this paper. One is the Carter Energy Program, which is foraging its way to Congress right now, state energy programs, and then finally an overview of how the national energy program is going to impact the state and what sort of interrelationships might exist state as a result of this national program. The somewhat voluminous result of that work that you hand here, and we did come up with several areas of concern that we believe ought to be examined more closely from the standpoint of...
This is Ed Brand. Listen, this is Ed.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had to give some construction work to the little guidance this morning.
Okay.
They might have ruined me.
Fred, this is Dick Haggard, who was just updating us on legislative affairs and going to bring us up to speed on how we're looking insofar as the national energy policy goes and what we might look at in relation to that. He just started.
Thanks, Bill. Glad to know you, Dick.
I was just saying that we were asked by Bill to look at three things. One, just to briefly review, the Carter Energy Program, state energy programs and policies, and then how those two, both the state and the national, interact and relate and are going to affect the state. We have a preliminary memorandum here, which he will be sending out to members of the committee at some point. Just briefly, I'd like to just run through the conclusions of the problem areas that we've kind of identified here as a result of the Carter program if it's enacted. And it's very difficult to tell at this point just what kind of program that's going to be, because obviously the Congress is squeezing and working it over. But it seems to be coming out, at least in its broad objectives, very much the way Carter, who is it from? What did we interrupt? We interrupted.
Go ahead.
Yes,
sure.
Sorry.
Well, okay, moving right along. I read this morning before my construction work has arrived.
Oh, yeah.
Carter's program and the progress it's made.
Okay.
How you doing, Glenn?
Brad, what we did is we just sort of, the governor hasn't appointed the four public members yet. I spoke to him a couple of times, and they said they would appoint him last Monday, but they haven't been done. So we just sort of went along and started, and they elected me chairman. I hope we had no objection to that. That's about where we're at. Dick has prepared a substantial paper on the subject he was going into. I'll see if everybody gets copies of that. Jack, I haven't had a chance to go through the paper that you gave me Saturday or Friday. Have you gone through it? And maybe you can make just a couple of comments on what DNR is doing or...
Well, I'll do that. But this is a DPD,
study, yeah,
which is sort of in-house where the authority lies in the government, and a little bit of comment of what they think might happen, the restructuring. So basically, that's just an in-house, in administration lineup as far as DNR. Yeah, I'd be pleased to tell you what little we're doing, but
okay,
as much as we're doing.
Okay, why don't you kick it off?
Well, basically, as you know, we're in the leasing of minerals, and we're in the, through the Alaska Royalty Board, we're disposing of oil and gas. We're working on a oil and gas leasing policy, which will result hopefully in some legislation. It may be fairly technical in the sense of just improving on the existing legislation. That may not be any basic policy change, although I'm probably going to make some recommendations that will result in that. With a view to when the state decides to put up oil and gas leases, under what terms should they be put up. As you noticed, the Congress, the Senate, has just passed the bill which has changed the OCS leasing terms for federal leases, and I think it's in the state's interest to have a policy that runs pretty much alongside theirs, at least as far as OCS leasing is concerned. But we're doing that, and maybe if you want to take a little...
Now, why don't you go ahead and finish up then?
But as I told you on the phone, I think the brief time I've had talked with Bob Loresch, I think our feeling is maybe the committee could devote itself to examining Alaska's energy requirements. I think that area in the state is not being covered too well. and it would, what are the in-state uses of energy? What will be needed, the projections, etc. I know everybody's messing around with it, but maybe this committee could help draw together the various studies and agencies and really have the legislature address itself to, you know, what are Alaska's energy requirements for the next 20 or 25 years. And that'll lead you into all kinds of avenues of our field, which is mineral extraction, leasing, resource development kind of thing. Of course, it all depends on the national policy, as Dick is getting into. Where does Alaska fit in that? If the feds do one thing, how does it affect us? If you develop Devil's Canyon, do you need Beluga coal? How do you get Beluga coal to market? Where is the market? Private industry, of course, is doing a lot on that score. The people who have the leases, the question of is our royalty on coal leases high enough? This is going to come up to the legislature in the next few years. Is there enough gas in the Cook Inlet, and should we be allowing it to be exported to South 48? What are the prospects of finding more to make up that presumed deficit? These are the things that our department deals in, the leasing, the finding, the extraction of resources. Of course, we do get involved in the pricing and selling of those resources to the South 48 markets. But the energy requirements within the state, we feel, is probably the area that's getting the least treatment. We do have a statutory requirement under the Oil and Gas Royalty Advisory Board to come to the legislature each year and show what are the in-state needs. Because without it, a sale cannot be made of anything but the surplus, as you know. But that's a pretty much a perfunctory kind of a thing up to date, I think. This question of what are the in-state needs and what is surplus? I know DPDB is doing some work on it. We're doing some work on it. I'm sure the legislative Affairs Research Division is doing work on it, and I'm sure that your agency, the Energy Office, is doing work on it. I didn't come to make any organized presentation, so I apologize for being so across the board on this, but that's basically where we are coming from.
Okay. Any questions or comments for Jack before we get back?
I'd just like to comment about this in-state energy needs. The only comprehensive thing was that's been done has been in the electrical area, and it was a study that the legislature funded. But in gas and oil, it's been the just meeting that royalty gas requirement, and we need that type of information and addressed it in a very superficial manner. But breaking down by sector and getting down into regional levels has not been done at all. And I agree it's something that we're going to have to look at really carefully.
Okay. Any other comments or questions for Jack? Dick, why don't we go back to you? Of course, you'll be next.
Okay, sorry about the interruption. We're about ready to go into the problem points that we're looking at this Carter program. Point number one is the potential impact on the ability of the states to tax its own petroleum resources that will appear as a result of the Carter program. The program institutes a variety of taxes on both the production and the use of fossil fuels, oil and natural gas. And the tax will be imposed generally upon the difference between the current price controlled level of that oil and a market price, a world market price, which is arrived at in a somewhat complicated formula. But right now, if we take Cook Inlet as an example, the state, if it wishes by a floor price system, can say that we believe value of our resources is higher than that imposed by the, or set by federal price policy. Pick a number, $7 a barrel, $10 a barrel, who knows, whatever state policy might be on that, and tax it accordingly. That, at least initially, places a very bad burden on the producers and owners of that oil, but they can go to the feds for price relief. What, under this new system, with the tax imposed, to say it was $5 in Cook Inlet, and if it was allowed to go at the free market price, the price might be as high as 12. So consequently, the tax would be $7 a barrel, and our tax would fall on 5, not 12, or not on any intermediate number that the state might select as an appropriate objective value for its resources. And so, as a you view the state to some degree as an owner producer of natural resources, at least from the royalty end of it, then we have some limits being placed on our ability to get full value for our production. Point number two is, of course, that we are benefiting to some degree from, and I think this is probably more true of Anchorage than it is of other areas of the state, from the effects of federal price controls in terms of our consumption of oil products, because of the fact that some of the refineries that produce are small refiners that are not as subject to the full impact of the entitlements program and so on. There could be, and we haven't quantified this yet at all, a price increase effect as far as just for gasoline, for example. As a result of this crude price equalization tax, there will also be other price effects, which as a result of another tax which is going to be imposed, which I'll mention later. But again, this crude price equalization tax could have price effects at the pump or at the home heating level and so on. And this is running counter to state objectives in a variety of program areas, which in Commerce, the Power Development Administration, or the Alaska Power Authority, the Energy and Power Division, so on, are, the statutes are written with the objective of providing lowest cost energy and power availability to citizens of the state, generally commensurate with good business practice. Well, of course, the federal policy objective under the Carter program is to maximize costs, to encourage consumption. And we're already in a high-cost energy area in this state, and so consequently that it will be a recurring theme throughout the Carter program as we try to lower energy costs, both to make the burden more bearable to the consumers of Alaska and to provide hopefully a price incentive for some sort of economic activity in the state for development purposes. We're going to be just running head on time after time into these problems. The natural gas area is one that would be a great concern, I suspect, to the Anchorage Kenai area and longer term to most of the state, or at least the non-southeast area, as things stand now. They're going to tax natural gas. They're preempting our authority over intrastate gas. This bill will remove the state's authority to regulate intrastate gas and put it under the feds. It will not affect existing contracts per se, but after 1983, the bill calls for all gas sales to take place at a fuel oil equivalent price. A distillate price equivalent, so that you're talking about, I believe now that Anchorage Natural Gas is buying gas out of Cook Inlet for something in the neighborhood of 44 cents a thousand or something like that. The BTU equivalent price would be $1.75 to $2 in 1983 probably. And so we're talking about, again, a major pickup in our energy costs here. An important point is that this might make sense from a national policy standpoint, but if you can't move that gas to another market and it's sitting there, whether or not there's a very tough question as to how much we should be made part of the National Energy Program, given it's the old hackneyed phrase, sorry, but Alaska is a unique problem, but they are, you know, of course, unique and rather difficult because we're not a contiguous part of the United States, and so on. The system of auto taxes and rebates may be a minor point, but I think you're going to get a lot of howls from Alaskans. The Energy Policy and Conservation Act of 1974 mandated legislatively mandated auto efficiency standards. And so by 1985, the fleet objective for all cars sold will be 27.5 miles to the gallon. And the Carter program on top of that puts taxes on it. So the cars that are getting less, you could get up to a $2,700, $2,500, something like that, tax penalty on a car that gets, I look here, I don't have it right in front of me, it's back in the back of the paper in the detail part, but something like 13 or 14 miles to the gallon. Now this could affect Alaskans because of their very high dependence on relatively fuel inefficient vehicles, four-wheel drive, light duty trucks, bigger cars because of the conditions up here. And I think that proportionately we're going to pay a higher price than other Americans if this program goes through. Now, of course, the Congress has been cutting back on the amount of penalty that's imposed here and how bad it's going to be come 1985, I just don't know. But, or even 1980 is what that is. But that's another consideration, which I have another area where I think Alaska will pay a higher cost proportionately than other citizens of the United States. In addition to that, of course, there is a proposed gasoline excise tax standby thing, and that is probably is indeed in great danger in the Congress, whether it's going to be enacted or not is pretty questionable. But again, it's a problem that is going to hit Alaska potentially if the thing as proposed would trigger a nickel a gallon and up to, I think, a maximum of 50 cents a gallon total per gallon of gasoline if national consumption of gasoline goes past certain target levels. Now, and we would pay that regardless of how efficient we were as a state, as a group, and regardless of what our commuting patterns were, what special problems we might have, and so on. And I suspect that you would find that our per capita transportation needs are relatively low, simply because we have many areas of the state which are not served by roads, that as a result, on a population basis, again, we might very well find that we're paying a disproportionate, we're paying for inefficient use of gasoline in Los Angeles and its excise tax system, when in fact Alaskans are perhaps, at least relative to their ability to do anything about it, more efficient as a group than other states. And in any event, of course, we're completely at the mercy of what the rest of the country does. We're going to be, if that thing became law, we would be paying the penalty regardless of whether what we did. We had no way of saving ourselves, of course. The electric utility rate section of the Carter program are some concern, I think, especially for the rural areas of the state. It forbids the use of any of this promotional pricing for electric block rates, declining rates for large consumption, and so on. And one area of concern that did emerge was that if the state, or we have these regional power authorities and so on, and it's a state objective that we provide power, a lower cost power, better quality service and so on to the rural areas. When you're installing electrical generating capacity, you can put in incremental capacity by an excavator size generator and stuff for not much more than it costs you to go ahead and put in the base requirement. And for rural areas or smaller towns, it can be important to have an extra power available that you can offer perhaps at a little bit lower cost, again, as a development incentive, as a commercial incentive. This would be forbidden under the law, so that is an area of potential concern. The most serious problem is going to be the use taxes, which are imposed, which are on top of all these other taxes we're talking about. Industrial and utility consumption of oil and natural gas is going to be rather heavily taxed. State, because we have a good resource base in the conventional fossil fuel area, we're close to the sources. Could be expected if in a market situation to be allowed or benefit from that over time. The national plan, as it's currently proposed, makes no allowance for that. And again, natural gas in the area or in the Anchorage area will be taxed, an incremental tax on the use of it by utilities. In fact, after, I don't remember exactly, 1983 or 1988 maybe, it's forbidden to use natural gas and oil for construction of utility plants. We will not be able to use our own resources to power our electric utilities, and which leaves us with not very many alternatives. Just briefly here, review it here, I haven't read this since Friday. Well, it goes up substantially, but utility tax beginning in 1983 would be 25 cents a million BTU, which is something over a dollar per barrel. And it increases to I think there's a differential tax imposed too, as well as the difference between the market price for distillate and for natural gas. I mean, there's a variety of fairly complicated ways they go about this, which are described in here, again, in some detail. But that is going to be have quite an impact on the state. And one of the primary ones, of course, is that it will, the objective of the Carter program is to get everybody to convert to coal. They want utilities and large industrial users of any sort to use coal. That has a lot of environmental implications for the state. It has leasing implications. The effect of the national program, of course, will be to calls for very aggressive development of national coal reserves and a doubling of production of coal by 1985. It's going to have quite a price effect on coal generally. It could increase demand for coal, to a great extent. And the state is going to be, as we have a lot of coal, maybe not such great quality coal, but a lot of it. And we could find ourselves in a position of being, having people knocking down our door looking for our coal and not have policies in place to handle that, regardless of what your feelings are about whether or not we want that kind of development, but it's something we should be prepared for. And this is over and above the effects of using coal for our own economy. Incidentally, Greg Erickson, our director of research, is preparing a much more detailed study of the effect on specifically electric utilities in the state of this program. His background in economics and the electric utility area, so we're going to be looking very closely at what kind of extra costs in for by regional area and so on that might be expected as a result of this. And then finally, on the positive side, of course, they have some giveaways, some subsidies and supports and rebates and so on for people who are more efficient and use nuclear, solar, and so on. Those may or may not have applicability to the state of Alaska, but certainly relative to the way our economy is currently structured by 1985, it seems very unlikely that we're going to be able to make a major transformation of our energy base in this state and gain back by using non-conventional energy sources what we're going to lose by the taxes and restrictions imposed by the Carter program. That's essentially it. Those are the things we've come up with. And as I said, there's a great deal more detail in here as to how the thing will work. And as well, we also have a section on state programs, which is just kind of a statutory summary of the activities of the various departments of the government, which points up that the state doesn't probably really have an energy policy. We have a lot of energy programs, or not even that many, but a few, which have kind of grown up as a result of specific problem-solving efforts that have occurred in the past, and so we create a bureau or an agency or an authority and so on. But there's no comprehensive way of looking at our energy situation at this point.
Thank you, Dan. Questions? Comments?
Well, I'd gather that the Carter program, there's some good points in all right as far as conservation is concerned. I think the philosophy is, if I get it right, the program, what I read about it is that they're using tax measures in order to discourage consumption. This is one of the philosophies. To me, it would be like raising taxes on food so people won't eat so much. So they're just raising the taxes on energy so people won't use as much. Well, I think this is the wrong philosophy. I think you should use, not tax it, but encourage research and other sources of it, or exploration of what we have. Apparently we've got plenty of it. It's a matter of
we don't benefit very much. They have very, there's very, very little in the way of producer incentives in the Carter program.
Yeah.
Really ignores that area, and of course, the state is a potentially very large producer, owner of oil and natural gas resources. That would be a matter of concern if they don't provide incentives for the private sector in that area. They're not providing incentives for us.
Yeah.
So,
as you mentioned, it's geared to outside population, outside.
And where they don't have nearly as much oil and gas to find. So again, it may be appropriate from a national policy standpoint, and yet hurt us a great deal about generating any national benefits that are very, very.
From an electrical standpoint, I would think it would really pay for the state to look into the possibilities of several hydropower plants, just to get away from fossil fuels. If they're going to patch hell out of them, why then we're going to pay for electrical bills.
Yeah, that's just about all. If this thing goes through, that's about all we've got left, unless we want to go to coal or nuclear.
I understand that the research economics on the Bradley Lake hydropower plant on the Kenai Peninsula was based on 70% gas. And well, the gas goes to, we'll say, $1.50 or $2. The state's talking about $2.50, but then this would be a feasible project, definitely.
Well, not only would it be feasible, of course, on a price basis, but you can also look at, the legislation simply forbids. I mean, you know, what we had in place by the target date, 1985 or whenever it is all we're going to be allowed.
Yeah.
And if any new generating capacity in the state will not be allowed.
After
it doesn't matter what price they were to pay for.
After 85.
I think the 85 is the date, and might be even 1983, but there's a lot of different
dates. I think we got to move fairly fast on some of this stuff. We're going to get in gear.
Well, there's some important questions. I don't do that. Clearly, the state, we're 49th in terms of population in the country now or something, our ability to influence what the Fed is doing is, I think, admittedly pretty limited.
Yeah, correct.
And we need to, if these are legitimate concerns, then we have to mobilize and make people aware of the problem, and certainly rely on the congressional delegation to help out there, because once the things are in place, what we can do is going to be very, very limited. Our fate will be out of our hands in many of these areas after the bill becomes law, and time is getting short. The people I talked to in Washington indicate they're looking for final passage maybe by December. So I think within this the big omnibus Carter plan is it's going to eventually come out of Congress by that date, and so consequently, if these are areas of concern, the work of this committee, I think, will be quite important because it's the only currently constituted state group that's looking at this problem in an organized fashion, I think, without getting fair resources of commerce. But
well, this is an obvious thing to get everybody together. That's the reason behind the can you second guess Congress for just a second? Done a lot of work on that. How do you think the Carter plan is going to go through? Essentially, as submitted, not essentially submitted, and you touched on a very sensitive subject. What kind of chance are we going to have of really affecting that?
Well, it's already virtually out of the House of Representatives, and I think that. Without denigrating Congressman Young's influence in Washington, I mean, he's only one of 435, and we've got two of 100 in the Senate. So that our ability to affect things in the Senate is going to be a lot greater than it was in the House. So the ball game would be more important over there. As it looks now, that they're going to pass a bill that's, I don't know, pick a number, 70% of what Carter asked for in terms of effect. What I'm giving you here is what Carter asked for. There have already been some softening and some changes, and because of the time constraints, and it's just almost impossible to do telephone research in Washington, D.C. anyway from back here because of time differences and so on. It costs $1 million. So it's not going to be as bad as I outlined it, but they haven't cut, as far as I know, any of the specific areas that I discussed. They have reduced the effects. They've sort of downgraded tax rates and so on, may not made it quite as heavy and onerous, but the broad outline is still there, and it looks like it'll probably be enacted that way.
Mr. Chairman, Dick, I've read everything in the many magazines that I subscribe to and everything I've seen in both of our papers and one out of state that I subscribe to on energy and cut all of this out. And I'm really surprised at our energy chief, Schlesinger, who was coming up with such a thing. I thought I'd give him credit for more than that. As defense chief, I thought he did a good job. I'm more concerned about this, and it's the reason that I am on the committee, because I've never been on the committee before. As much so as D2 lands and many other things, I think it's a more serious problem than a lot of people think. And most people are not getting excited enough about it. I don't know if we need another Omar or Seamall or something, but I was talking to a lobbyist before we left, did you know? And one I have a lot of respect for, and he says we have enough energy in this country to last 1,000 years. If we just put the environmentalists in hibernation for about 2 years and let us go along the coastlines, OCS, mainland, interior, wherever we think there is some, in 2 years, we'll have what we need and still have reasonable respect for the environment. And this is conservation. There's nothing to really, as I see it, from everything I've read, to encourage production. It's a one-sided situation. You've read this in many articles too, I suppose. And I just wonder when they're coming up with the other plan, the other side.
Well, I don't know, of course, but I the way I read what's going on back there, my background is out of Washington, but before I got to work for the agency in December, I was back there for the better part of 10 years as an energy specialist in several capacities, is that the national policy decision is that the country does not have, over time, it ought to get away from reliance on fossil fuel or the conventional fossil fuels and rely more on coal and so on. That may be the wrong thing, but that seems to be the direction they're going, and with this administration, I would be very surprised to see a major incentive program for development of conventional fossil fuel resources. It's just generally bad news from Alaska's standpoint, and whether, I'm not really sure, qualified to know whether it's bad news from a national standpoint or not, but.
I know there's not much we can do about it in the state, but just brainstorming a bit. I had a research and development assignment in the service once, and we dealt with a lot of technical representatives from General Motors, Food Machinery, American Foundry, and Machine, and all these big industries, companies that were looking for a big Army contract. And they said, you just tell us what the Army needs and must have. And we've got the brains in this country or somewhere in the world. And if they need it bad enough, even the government will help us subsidize research for prototype or experimental type and eventually develop it. And I believe if we put enough money behind it, we can replace maybe fossil fuels with something else, maybe a Dick Tracy magnetic type device or something. But I know there's a solution. And it amazes me. I've been up to Washington the last 3 summers and spent a little time there at my own expense and learned a lot and sit around and listen to the congressmen or debate and visit the offices and various organizations. And I have more confidence in what we're doing down here a lot of times than I do with what they're doing up there. They operate in so much ignorance so often. There are a lot of experts around, but I just don't think the congressmen always vote in accordance with all that knowledge that's available. And it really, really bothers me. Another thing that the same law, another lobbyist, namely Monty Taylor, I don't think he minds my mentioning his name, for Exxon, who came from Santa Barbara up here. You remember when 602 ducks got one speck to a lot of oil on them down there during that oil spill? Well, a lot of time in courts and whatnot, they finally got a big portion of those oil rigs operating again. We need the energy. We need all of those rigs, million-dollar rigs, operating, plus a lot more, because they've had oil seepage close to shore there for centuries. The Spanish used to caulk the cracks in their ships with it. Hasn't been a good swimming beach. But he said, we need oil badly. But the Sierra Club and many others won't let us drill. But eventually, if we put enough rigs out there, we could dry up that reservoir of oil, be a good swimming beach. And we need the energy. But the environmentalists won't let us do it, the extreme environmentalists. I have some friends in the Sierra Club that think like I do. The others, they only see one side, and they're two sides in most situations. And I know there's not much you and I can do about it, possibly, but somebody can, and I don't know who we can get excited to do it.
Just a point of interest, I have no idea how broad the scope is of the energy office with reference to what you might be bringing here for our information. But I've got a series of questions which in actuality may be partially answered by what you have to say. I was wondering if we can.
Yeah, as soon as we finish with this, we're going to.
I can assume what you've said.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead, Tim.
I have a question for Dick, I think. On the, if this energy package goes through, the Congress pretty much as you've outlined here, would it be your opinion that there would be a loophole left there for sources of energy that would be, that would not be connected with fossil fuel? That, in other words, you can't develop a whole bunch of hydro and not have a use for it. But on the other hand, if these people are going to come along and say that as of a certain date, they're just going to chop everything off, that doesn't make very good sense. And what would be your opinion of the best way to influence the legislation in the Congress to leave a loophole for Alaska there for continued development of hydro?
Well, of course, hydro is not forbidden in the law.
Well, you've indicated all sources of energy. In other words, energy itself, use, is going to be curtailed, period.
It will be because of the effects on natural gas and oil, but what they want you to do is rely on hydro and coal and nuclear, and to the degree you can on solar and so on, so that those will be made much more economically competitive by the taxes. And then when you get to the cutoff, that you can no longer, when you build a new generating facility, you can no longer use oil or natural gas, and then that will not only make it economic, it will make it mandatory to use hydro if you have a resource, or go to coal or something else.
But you wouldn't think that would be necessarily restrictive of development of hydro?
No, I don't believe it. No, I think it will be very, it will promote hydro development. I think the concern from the state standpoint is if we can get gas, if we've got a lot of gas sitting under the ground here that we can get for X cents a thousand or a million BTUs, and it costs us five or six times that to build a hydroelectric plant instead of using that gas, it's going to impose a very, very high burden on the state of Alaska. Now, in any given area where, for example, if you don't have gas available in your local area, you're relying on fuel oil now, this will encourage development of hydroelectric to replace that fuel oil. It might not be a concern. I mean, it might be actually a plus from the standpoint of some areas. But from, again, from the overall state standpoint, I think there's a very good possibility that we would do better economically over time if we could have access to our resources as they exist and use them in at least the most economically efficient manner as possible.
But fuel oil is, or oil is part of this. I knew natural gas was, but you're saying diesel generators, the whole bit.
I have not had a chance to get into it, nearly as much detail as I would like. But that's short answer. Now, whether, obviously standby, peak power, there are all kinds of things that, maybe little emergency generators and stuff for things like that. But generally, major, I think, base load plants, will be forbidden from using this. And
that's surprising to me because particularly outside, in many cases, there are no other alternatives other than diesel. Here we have some, but...
Well, it won't be for existing uses, obviously. You won't be able to turn, you can't turn off the guys who are already using it. But it will be for new construction. So any of the utilities in the state that are already dependent or around the country will continue to use those, although at much higher prices. And the citizens
question, yes, Mr. Gill? That's true in the Cook Inlet that we have alternatives. What about the bush? I mean, what kind of source of energy are they going to use?
I think it's a matter of great concern. And because small bush communities don't have, in many cases, organized utility activity, they just have maybe a generator in a building, and they buy the fuel oil that comes up on the barge, but that fuel oil will be being taxed. They won't forbid them from buying an electric generator that it runs on oil because they're so small, obviously, but they will be paying the price imposed by this program for the fuel, which is going to be a lot higher than it is today, when it's already a matter, from a state policy standpoint, as expressed by the legislature in a variety of acts, a matter of concern because of the high energy costs.
You know, Dick, the conversion to coal is going to raise the cost of most everything. And not only that, it's going to raise taxes. And there'll be some rebates. But as this article states, the federal government's going to lose money, and we're going to be taxed to make it up. And most all products, I would say, a majority of them, will go up in price because of the cost of conversion. I'm really concerned about this. What can we do?
Well, I'm afraid I don't have any good answers. I think we've talked about this a little bit, but I think that someplace along the line that the committee or members of the committee are going to want to go back and talk to some people back there about this problem, and at least find out, maybe when the congressional process is a little more mature, and see the Alaska delegation, talk to them, try to make them aware of concerns and so on. But that's obviously the clinker in the whole thing. You can sit here and doom and gloom with the report, but
yeah,
we're way off on the tail end of federal policy as a state, I'm afraid.
Well, you know, I talked to Senator Lexalt and Hayakawa when they were here, and they weren't for it at all. And I've talked to a lot of other people when I was up there for a week in Washington. It seems to me it's the president's plan, and the party is doing its best to help him get it through, and we're the victims. But, you know, some watering down, of course, but to get his plan through. And I think that's a hell of a way to go, but I don't know of anything that we can hear can do about it. I wish I did.
Any other questions for Senator Hacking?
Just a comment. I don't think we have to worry anyway about the development of any new energy sources that impinges on the South 49, because if that D2 bill goes through, as Mr. Udall has indicated, there's going to be no access to that power anymore for the people in the South 49. I think this does point out that we had better be taking care of ourselves and forgetting about South 49 right now, because we're going to identify hydro sources, for instance, and somehow or other impress on the Congress that we've got to have access to those sites. I think it best be done now.
I might make a comment on that specific question. In this one study I'm going to describe, we looked at potential hydro sites that would be developed between now and the year 2000, talking to people in the area. Then one of our people took the Udall D2 bill, and all of them but one are under the D2 lands.
I'd like to have a copy.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah. Anything else?
I haven't heard that emphasized too much. Maybe we should emphasize.
Thanks very much, Dick. Are you going to be around, or are you?
Well, yeah, I'm going back this evening, but
are you going to be around?
I'll be around here. Yeah.
Okay. So. Good. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. Clarissa, you want to go through a Reader's Digest version of what the Energy Office has been doing?
Okay. Initially, I guess the biggie that the Department of Commerce is involved in, and I'm sure you're all aware of, is the Alaska Power Authority. And the main attention being paid by the Power Authority now is the question of the Upper Susitna Dam projects, whether Devil Canyon and Latana should be built or supported by the state and financed and built by the state, et cetera. In conjunction with that question, our office and the Power Authority are jointly sponsoring a study to look at the rail belt area in terms of what options are available in some kind of cost-benefit analysis For example, what if Beluga coal was developed for power generation? How does that compare to what the cost would be associated and the time frames associated with the Upper Susitna Dam project? Concurrently, and this ties in directly with the Cook Inlet Reserve question, how fast are the Cook Inlet reserves being expended? Actually, how much is in there that's uncommitted? And this type of question, we're working closely with Pat Dobie's shop on that. It's mainly to get a general handle as to what our options are here in the Rail Belt area, so that with the final purpose being so the power authority can have some solid ground to base a decision as to whether the state should get involved in the Upper Susitna Dam project. But as well, I think it'll give us all a much better understanding of where we can go in that respect. Secondly, the Department of Commerce administers the Water Resources Revolving Loan Fund, and I've got to admit, I don't know that much about it, but pre-selected areas or cities have been allowed the opportunity to apply for the loans, and mainly that's to serve the function of giving the communities money to get their feasibility studies done. As I understand it, where the problem lies is getting this additional analysis completed so that they can then go to the, let's say, REA and apply for loans. But the problem to date has been just getting that additional money to see really what you're talking about. And I think there's four or five communities that are involved in that. We've tried to give attention to what our in-state needs are going to be. And one of the vehicles that we've used is called the Alaska Resources Planning Project. And it was funded, it's federally funded by the Energy Research and Development Administration. We're just completing the first year of it, and you should all be getting the final report the end of September sometime.
Who's doing it? Is the Energy Office doing that?
Through a federal grant. Basically, what we've tried to do is this year is to take an inventory of the energy resources on a statewide basis, not doing anything original, but looking at what USGS says is there, what Bureau of Mines says is there, what DGGS says is there, and to get an overall picture and where the differences and the gaps lie. It's also to identify the technologies that would be associated with extracting those resources that we have. What's the state of the art right now? What might it be in the year 2000? One of the biggest things that I think will be of most interest to all of us is we took the major fossil resources, well, we took hydro, oil, gas, and coal, and we basically contacted experts throughout the state and said, tell us, in your opinion, what will be the development of these areas? When do you think they'll be developed? Which are the hottest ones right now? And that type of thing. And we came up with a general ranking so that you could look at them and at least get a feel for when these things might start going.
What was the ranking in
that term? Oh, it's just in terms of dates and what the comments of the experts were about these individual areas.
But that's pre-Carter energy.
Oh yeah, this was just to get a handle on what we've got, what might be developed, when it might be developed. For example, the Beluga coal field, as Mr. Roderick mentioned, is hot now. Well, that showed right at the top of the list that there's a good chance of that thing being going within the next 5, 6, 7 years for export and internally. This coming year, what we want to do is address the issues specifically that would be involved, let's say Beluga coal is developed. What kind of economic ramifications are we going to have? What would be the effect in the Anchorage area? What type of costs are we talking about? What kind of financing? Are they talking about strip mining? What type of reclamation are we going to have to deal with? It's trying to get specific as far as coal, taking a look at the Beluga thing, and then also the hydro. What are some of the licensing permit problems that you have to go through in order to develop a resource. And nothing at a total level has been done in the state. There are bits and pieces, but the feds have certain pieces, the state does, the local community. And we just want to get a handle as to, in coal and hydro, what happens? What's the time frame? What are the permits? How do they interrelate? That type of thing. So this project is of a very general, broad nature initially, and now we're trying to zero in on areas that we know are going to start getting a lot more attention and get a jump ahead of the process. The second area in this that's related to this is we've gotten most of our funding through federal contracts, and it's the one we're just beginning is an energy intensive industries study. And for the first time, we want to look at the potential industries that might develop in Alaska, taking a look at our energy and land resources. How much it costs, why aren't they coming in now, narrowing it down to prime ones and get to actual capital costs associated with it, the economic impacts, environmental impacts we might expect, for example, or the this scares some people, but if they use geothermal energy for an aluminum plant down on the chain, sounds far-fetched, but in 20 years it might not be. What might be involved? Petrochemical industries, is that really a viable economic alternative now? The feeling is now, no, it isn't, with at least just talking about royalty gas and oil. And it's this energy intensive industries is a 9-month project. And again, it's an attempt to get ahead of the thing, to try and see what options the state has, what industries might we want to attract, and that type of thing.
Excuse me, how long are you?
We're just starting.
So it's 9 months sort of from today.
That's right.
Right.
It won't be until the end of March or so before we have anything substantive. We got another grant through the FEA to look at the use of the royalty gas for in-state purposes. How could it be used? Are petrochemical plants an option? Could you funnel off the gas to Fairbanks for residential purposes, that type of thing? That is just going to be finalized within another month.
The final report?
Final report. And there's nothing new and sensational in it, really. petrochemical, we just don't have enough gas to talk about it because they start talking about world scale plans. The residential use of the gas in Fairbanks is a possibility, you know, taking the El Paso, the Alcan route. But you all will be getting a copy of that as well. The other areas we're starting into and you haven't seen anything at all is conservation. We're participating in, again, federally funded state energy conservation programs that'll be getting into a lot of public information education, workshops on how to winterize your homes, public spots correlating energy savings with dollar savings. The big thing we'll be doing on this is the development of statewide lighting and thermal efficiency standards. Right now, there is no authority to create such a standard. All we have right now are health and safety codes. But through a committee process, we hope, if we get our money soon enough, to submit to the legislature, well, to the governor, who in turn, we'd hope, would submit a package to the legislature, the coming legislative session. And what this deals with is the philosophy that you've got to start restricting the energy consumption of buildings, new buildings. So you won't see a lot of the glass, all glass buildings because they're so inefficient. But the national standard that exists right now sort of says you can build a building any way you want, but don't use more than so much energy per square foot in it, which does limit your options.
But won't there be quite a have the effect on that just by the taxing proposals that the administration is talking about?
Yeah, but this is the other, they're coming at it from the other end. This is part of the, this Conservation and Production Act, which said, okay, states, you develop your own standards. But then a year later, Congress passed another law that gave HUD the authority by 1980 to develop mandatory standards. So they're getting us at both ends.
HUD.
Actually, for residences in Alaska, and it won't have a huge effect if we adopt this one standard, because we build the homes fairly efficient now. The commercial buildings and industrial and institutional buildings will be affected quite a bit. But the committee approach is to look at it from a regional standpoint as well. Can we talk about a statewide single standard applying the same criteria to the bush as we can to Southeast and those type of issues? And of course we can't, because they're two different ends of the world. That is will have a major effect, I think, on energy consumption, future energy consumption in the state. I won't go through all the programs we're involved in, but one of them is we've got some volunteers that are, they're like Vista workers that we're trying to get out into the communities to get energy related activities going. They'll be giving workshops. We're trying to initiate an energy conservation awareness week in October. We're working with the Anchorage School District and getting energy related curriculum into the schools, that type of thing. The other area, which may answer your questions, is the alternate energy area. What are we going to do to meet our own in-state needs? The one thing we're doing is the state-funded wind demonstration project that we're going to have in two places. One, we're going to put up a small 2 kW Dunlight wind generator at Kotzebue and at the community college building there. And the purpose of that is not only to see how this machine works there. It should be fine because this particular piece of equipment is approved. Been around for years and years. We're going to tie it into the system, the electrical system of the building, but also we want to get a handle as to what kind of operation and maintenance training is going to be needed when wind power becomes available for bush communities. Because we don't want the thing to happen where we put up a piece of equipment and the local people just haven't been trained in how to use and operate properly and to maintain it properly. Yeah, right. So that's what we're trying to get at with that. What are some of the problems we're going to run into there? Our major effort is being spent at putting up a 20 kW Grumman wind generator at Nelson Lagoon out on the Alaska Peninsula. And what we want to find out, and I like to emphasize, is when you get in wind generators above the 6 to 8 kW range, which are really small, we're getting into demonstrations. It's an experiment. The wind technology, since the initiation of the REAs in the lower 48, just dropped off because they could produce diesel cheaper.
Anything about what? 10?
6 to 8. Right. So it's just been within the last 2 or 3 years that we're getting back into trying to develop these big, larger machines.
What was Nelson Lagoon?
Well, it's got the wind.
A lot of wind on the chain.
It's got a lot of wind.
How many people went?
There's only 15 homes in the village. The people are fishermen, quite mechanically oriented. We felt that we wanted to try it in an area that
wouldn't be a failure.
Wouldn't be a failure. You say wouldn't.
Would not.
Right. Because if we go the first time, it's just a bust. We've lost it all. Where we're. What we did, until now, the village had a small. Everybody had individual generators, if they had them at all, at their homes. To date, we've put in a small electrical grid and tied it into two diesel generators that the school had there that weren't being used. And they've been operating on this small grid for about 3-4 months now. And just the fuel savings to the villagers from the central power approach is, they've estimated to be about $20,000 a year.
Clarissa, do you have much more? I don't want to cut you short. We're trying to get out by noon. I don't know if we're going to make it.
I'll go real quick. Anyway, that should be up and operating about September. Our belief is that if these machines can hold up in rural Alaska, that the economics, because of the fuel prices going up, it's almost there. If we can find machines that'll work, that wind could be used as a supplemental power source out there, particularly the coastal areas. We're looking at using geothermal springs for aquaculture purposes. And we've selected a site, this is federally funded again, a site in southeast, happened to be Bell Island Hot Springs. And we might be trying to get some federal money for a demonstration or a pilot plant out there.
I might hear up for a minute. Why in the world don't you pick a hot springs area that is active, that's close to a community, where the information that you develop might be directly tied into the needs of a community?
Well, this whole contract was to apply it to fish hatcheries. And so we did. We screened all the geothermal information we had statewide, tied it into the known fisheries that were available. We subcontracted this to Fish and Game and selected six sites that appeared to have the hot spring, the fresh water, and the fishery. And that were the three major criteria. Then a team went out and actually did on-site surveys. And it turned out that either we didn't have one or the other. The literature was wrong. The spring wasn't big enough. Fresh water source wasn't there. And ironically, the last site was Bell Island, and it seemed to have it all together. But it wasn't a community oriented. It was mainly for just the construction of the nature.
Fish is priority over humans.
No, not really.
These are saltwater fish, though, you're talking about.
Yeah, salmon. Other area of activities, the rural crises, problems that continually reoccur. Villages run out of cable in the winter. We help to coordinate various agencies and private organizations to see that we can get the fuel out to them, try and arrange an amicable way of who's going to pay for it, that type of thing. We've located some surplus military bulk storage tanks at Fort Wainwright and Cold Bay, and have notified like the Native corporations, various villages, saying, hey, we found these. If there's any way for you to get them out and get them into your village, you got them. And I've sponsored a couple of fuel management seminars for the people in the villages that are in charge of handling the fuel, so that they know how to handle it properly, store it properly, that kind of thing. We're very interested in tidal power potential in the Cook Inlet area, which could provide a tremendous amount of the power needs here. Right now, it's not economically viable when you can have it competing with conventional hydro, but we're interested in possibly looking at the Kinnick Arm crossing being built to accommodate tidal at a later date, and that just happens to be one of the areas that the tidal is being opened. So that's about it.
Okay. Have you dusted off anything on the Rampart?
Rampart's sort of the issue, I think.
We'd better reopen.
Eat that was
a life issue.
Maybe we better reopen that and shake everybody up.
Okay, just for the committee's benefit, hopefully we can have some questions for Clarissa, go through quickly. We'll take a 5-minute break, get coffee, and come back and kick around a sheet full of ideas that we have, and try and get out by noon, because I realize everybody has some really things to do. It may not be the best way, but from a time standpoint, hopefully. So, are there questions for Clarissa? We're going to do this first.
Clarissa?
Clarissa interests me, you know, the production of an alternate. Go both ways. I'm encouraged.
I've had some thoughts, which my concern ties not only with the development of a statewide energy policy, but which we might be able to implement within the next 15 years, given the constraints of finance and everything else. But dealing also with the current problems, which exist more primarily in not only on a statewide basis, but particularly in the rural areas, when we're talking about fuel, which is in excess of $2 a gallon, the people already are paying off the nose. You know, it's not like I go to Bill's place and I can turn on this gas-operated stove, which whatever, 1,000 cubic feet a mile or whatever. Whatever you do, you know, but you know the problems which are existent not only because we've never had a statewide energy policy, but it's never been economically even developed one or political. You know, like such a minor thing as transport of fuel. When we don't have a transportation system except for planes. And when planes are prohibited from hauling fuel, you know, that's a concern that I have. It certainly should be looked at. Of course, the restriction is from on high, from CAB and FAA, and you know, any pilot desires to get around those rules and regulations which those people have, you know, they lose their license, they can't fly anymore. But in the meantime, community may be out of fuel. You go to a more perhaps degenerate form of transportation, hauling a drum at a time by snow machine, and then it's $200 a barrel. I'm concerned about that. You know, there's some geothermal. There is some geothermal potential within my geographic area, the Seward Peninsula, which may have application not only for power generation, but for agricultural use in the Pilgrim Springs area above Teller, you know, below Shishmaref, above Elam. You know, there are three or four different sites right on the Seward Peninsula. You talk about the tides, I think if you put a big screw at the Bering Straits, I mean, you could perhaps power that in Alaska. I don't know. Between big diamonds and little
Iceland diamonds. Does a good job of using it for agricultural and heating homes.
Tie in, the thing that I'm concerned that I'd like to see us do is somehow tie in with reference to creation of a state policy on energy close to it. There's got to be a state policy on transportation because we could have an energy policy which may satisfy the needs of perhaps the more urban areas, but 95% of the state is out there, and in many cases 105% of the energy is out there too. And so these are some of the thoughts I hope that we take into consideration during some of our gatherings, and what staff we do have them look at these things in the energy office for departments.
Senator Bill? A question for Al. I've been out to a lot of the villages when I had the Project Hire program on active duty, and I've never seen any natural gas in the form of petrolane, propane, butane. It's always been oil. And a lot of places, they don't have any trees, they can't use wood. Is it just oil primarily?
Well, it's oil, it's almost 100% oil. You, maybe in Nome and in Kotzebue and in a house or two in some village, you might have propane, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the use of propane is actually being used more and more in Nome because we just went to, I think, 28 cents a kilowatt.
Okay, flat?
more questions for Clarissa?
One, is the federal government doing anything on this wind power? I see a lot on solar, but I don't see too much on wind.
We've been frustrated by them. The main people with the money is the Energy Research and Development Administration. And for small wind systems, they've decided that what they want to do is test them thoroughly and get all the data on the existing systems. And they have a site near Boulder, Colorado that they're doing it. And they refuse to get into demonstrations until they complete this program. And we've been running into trying to get something going here for the last year and a half. I'm sure in another 2 years we will have some type of program going here. They're also looking at large wind systems, 200 kW, 1500 kW. But for our main interest, which is rural applications, I think we're talking in the 50 to 60 kW size wind generators, not these huge big things. We couldn't even get them up.
Probably. You know,
60 kW.
60 to 100 to 150
kW
is basically the
whole side of the street.
But you know, when we talk about creation of an energy policy for the state, and you know, we have communities where somebody might have a 1,200 watt Kohler gasoline for his own household, and maybe the school might have a 7.5 or a 10 or a 12 or a 25 kW, you know, and the rest is catch-as-catch-can in the Coleman lamp, you know. You know, I think. You know, we have to create a focus and an atmosphere for it. We create a policy which we can implement over the next 15 or 20 years for statewide application, but maintain some focus on the present problem.
Bill, if I could make one more comment. Just for your information, Public Utilities Commission is now in the midst of a complete analysis of the AVEX situation and what's going to happen, what they're going to find.
AVEC is one thing, but the lack of power is another.
Who did you say was doing
that? Public Utilities Commission.
Yeah, we had a bill on that.
Yeah, they got some money.
Yeah, we'll give them some money. That's a problem, too.
When do you plan
maintenance?
A joint study on APA and the energy, on the rail bill costs.
Okay, that should be, the contract has been signed, but nothing's scheduled. I'll be happy to send you a copy. I think we've probably been in this.
But do you expect it in a year? Or?
Oh, yeah. I think it's 6 to 8 months, in fact.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Clarissa? Okay. We'll take a 5 minute coffee break. Try and come back and have two major items just to see where we're headed, set some direction, and throw out a tentative schedule. Let's take five. Let's come back to order. We just passed out a tentative schedule, which is tentative depending on the availability of the committee members, and that's what we kind of like to run through right now. Very briefly, they're ballpark dates, which will firm up if everybody can make it. The first meeting, obviously, July 15th, to get the committee organized, staff going, and review of some of the existing information. I'll be sending you a great package, which will have a number of existing reports and studies if you can get to it, fine. After we go through this schedule, I've also put together about a page and a half of just discussion ideas. We can determine if they're important, if they're not important, or what is most important. We can't be all things to all people. Time, money, and other limitations prohibit that. So, quickly looking at the proposed schedule, our first meeting on or around July 15th, take the next month and a half to find out exactly what the feds, what the state have going, what's existing, what's planned.
we've got some of that information in, and to get a real handle on the major problem areas and the major objectives that we're going to go after. We meet again the first part of September and go through an overview of what the program is, the specific goals, questions, and scheduled public hearings. Perhaps we'll have a list of questions to take to the public hearings. If we hold public hearings between September and October, again, schedules permitting, I think what we'll do is go down to three member subcommittees, because it's a hell of a lot cheaper. It's not necessary for a 12-person committee, I don't think, to travel. And we'll just break down into three-person committees to go into the various areas. I'll run it from there. Come back after the public hearings and again put subcommittees or work groups together to hammer out solutions to specific problems that we can handle by January, if there's going to be legislation and or major policy decisions that we can fairly well substantiate. The resolution, HCR 67, which created us, calls for a report on January 1 of each year. So January 1 of next year and January 1, 1979. So we won't be stopping at when we go into session. We still have another year of work to go. So are there any comments or questions on the draft of the schedule?
Where would you be going, Bill?
We'd probably try and hit all the centers. Southeastern, Anchorage, Fairbanks, rural areas, northwest and north. Probably five areas. Does anybody have a problem with any particular time that they know right now they can't make? And obviously we'll again be talking to everybody before we go out for the public hearings.
Bill, I think there's a meeting of Legislative Council in Anchorage on the 29th of August.
Yeah.
Possibly, is that right?
Yeah, that's
true. And I'd suggest that any of these meetings that might be kind of held in conjunction with, but within the same time period, it might be very
good. That would be convenient.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll definitely try and do that.
You're not looking for more than a one-day meeting?
No. But I suspect that the second meeting will probably go a full day.
I would like to make one comment on the reports that come out of these various, particularly by staff, and I think that rather important. There's two ways to buy oats. You can buy the stuff right as it comes from the mill, or you can buy it after it's gone through the horse. And I'd like to suggest that any of these reports that come out, that we stick to the oats and leave the horse manure out. Because I don't know about, I know you guys. You all have reports coming in here, and you just can't keep track of all
right
stuff.
Yeah.
So, boy, anything that they can boil down in the way of reports, I personally would appreciate it very much.
Okay. We're going to set up a library of everything that comes in and have it filed, just a permanent library on everything that we do gather. Because I can foresee, you're absolutely right, just a tremendous amount of paperwork that we're just not going to be able to get to read.
Is that inclusive of roughage or you?
A little roughage, but not much. Any other comments on the kind of schedule? We'll try and, if there are none, we'll try and get specific dates coordinated with whatever other meetings are planned. And bounce it back to you in the mail, probably.
Okay.
Again, could you explain the work groups on your chart? What would they be?
Okay, if we come up with seven or eight major areas that we think we can resolve by January, I think we'll just break down into, or if you have a specific interest in one area, specific expertise, which you obviously do, Melissa does, Al is naturally interested in the rural areas. Those would be the work groups that sort of naturally flow together, try and solve the problem, and bring it to the entire committee, the solution to the entire committee. We hash it out there.
Should send Al to Iceland, I think.
The international trips, I mean, I don't want to go into the bush.
I'll go the second time.
I'm there already.
They do such a good job with this geothermal, I thought you might get.
Hawaii has tremendous geothermal potential.
No, Clarissa, no. No, Clarissa.
I think you.
My suffer from sunstroke.
Bill, I'm interested, of course, we've got plenty of time to discuss it, but if we have the time, I'm interested in the Aleutian chain. Did some guiding down there and did some hunting down there. And the wind blows all the time. I think it has great potential for wind machines. But anybody can do it as well. It's just that I know a little about it, I think.
Anything else? Our last piece of these are just the numbers are not important. It's just a list of an all inclusive list of miscellaneous items that we threw together. The possibility of looking at each one. Now, again, there's no way we can cover every item. We may have other items to add to the list, but I presume we're going to be scratching a lot of them off because there's just no way in hell we can cover all the items. Can you take a couple of minutes and look through it, put a check by that which you think is terribly important, and scratch out the ones you don't? I don't really know how else to go about it. The subject of energy and energy policy is tremendously broad. I think we should keep in mind while we're doing it that it is energy policy that we're headed toward, and we're looking to set up a state or establish a state energy policy. So some of these I can see should possibly be scratched off, but we just tried to break in a brainstorming session, throw down everything we could come up with. Other is very appropriate.
Take that picture.
Yeah.
That's international aspect of the energy policy.
Ah, oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, does anybody see a particular item on here that they know is being covered by another agency? Like, I think, Clarissa, you mentioned that the PUC is doing a study on AVEC. When did you see that? Say that was going to be ready?
I don't know. I think they're just in the middle of the early part of it right now.
They've barely started.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know what the timetable is.
I think, Mr. Chairman, the report to the legislature was mandated for February, wasn't it?
February 15th.
I think you're right.
So it was right in that area somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere it's in February.
Well, that's one area then that we might not want to spend a hell of a lot of time on. If we're trying to be covered, if we're...
The efforts to fit in the project, I know the Department of Commerce and Economic Development are are doing that, how deep do you want to get into it? It's bound to come into any discussions on energy in the state, but I think they're probably, I assume you don't want to go into depth on the Devil's Canyon thing, just sort of be brief as to how it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That really should encompass hydropower, and just hydropower, period, there's a lot of sites in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. That's more important than the Devil's Canyon.
Yeah.
But this D2 thing, I never heard that. That's, mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Just Upper Sioux City, and I think maybe the appropriate just to the hydropower projects. There's a lot of them that there's some information on, but where to go to get it, I'm not sure. The Corps engineer has a lot of information on it. And the Alaska Power Authority has a lot of information on some hydropower projects.
Oh, we do too.
But I don't know what depth it is.
Because we got it from all those people.
Okay, I think the first four in that subcategory one, general categories, are four areas that we really have to do some work in, just insofar as finding out. We've got a good idea in the paper from a DPDPN, number one, the energy policy jurisdiction. Who does what within the state? The conservation policy, got to start on with the Haggard Report, state and federal approaches. The use and development of energy resources, that's an obvious, that includes hydro, all the sources. How about going down to the Roman numeral two and just taking one by one? Has anybody checked anything? And just to move off the dime, see who feels, is number one important, federal energy policy and its impact on Alaska?
I think that's the real key.
Projected state energy needs. Comments or suggestions?
That's the other side of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
Higher level use in state manufacturing of non-renewable resources. Are we possibly getting out of our scope there?
I don't think that's our thing.
I think we can, maybe if we put priorities on things, we might can leave that one to last.
Okay. Coal conversion policy.
Lots of coal back up there.
Would that meant to be conversion to coal or conversion of coal to some other fuel?
No, conversion to coal.
To coal.
Would that not fall under number one?
Yes. Yeah, like I said, this is just miscellaneous ideas.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Leasing policy.
I don't
anticipate problems.
State's going to get into that. Yeah.
Is that the part of the bigger, humongous thing of DC?
Yeah.
I want to keep you posted on that. The lobbyists when they come up with their ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bigger thing is D2 and being locked out of, you know, our land.
Yeah.
If I may ask a question, how is the D2 question being handled by the state? Is this out of the governor's office or AG's office or?
Basically, Loresh and the governor.
Loresh.
Mm-hmm, are the two keys, I would say.
But there is a D2 committee.
Cowper was appointed.
Cooper was elected chairman.
From the legislative side.
Well, it's legislative Oscar and other persons too.
Public appointees.
Yeah. Public appointees.
Well, you know, talk about D2. I think CCN has the fact that the OCS activities, you know. May be something that we'll probably need to have at least peripheral view of, you know, mm-hmm. because that's some of where the energy sources are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we should include that as basically a general category for information.
But number eight has federal OCS, you see, and that is very federal.
How about cost benefits for development? that was just thrown down there because of the feeling that, well, we may be looking at alternative energy sources and may not be financially.
Any project, you'd have to go into that, I guess.
Well, I have difficulty with cost benefit in a general sense, simply because when it comes to cost benefit, when you're talking about 200 people a village, and it costs too much and it benefits so few people, that's part of generally the excuse for not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So if you want to make that a priority, you can give it to me, you know, I'll give it a priority. because cost benefit is often an excuse more than anything else when you deal with the rural area.
Yeah, and if we're looking, we have to keep remembering that we're policy committee, and that may not be part of policy. It may be once the policy is set, then it's sort of a step three.
That's kind of our being, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's strike that one. Short-term, long-term plans. What does that mean? What does that mean?
I think we just meant that we want to look both at the immediate needs and look beyond the immediate needs to 20, 30 years beyond in terms of actual planning.
Yeah.